Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming at you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. There happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, and we're going to be talking about the American form of government. Now, it's very important that people understand what our form of government is, understand that when people say that we are a democracy or we want to bring democracy to the world, they are flying in the face of all history. And you go back 50 years, 60 years, no one believed America was a democracy. Everybody knew we were a republic, and they knew the difference between a republic and a democracy. And they knew that democracies always end up in despotism, where, of course, a small group ruling oligarchy ends up ruling the masses. That was exactly what had happened time and time again throughout history when democracies had been established. And here in America, it was something unique and novel. America was formed as a nation under God. And it was acknowledged that our freedoms came from God. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that governments are instituted among men to preserve those rights, getting their power from the consent of the governed, or deriving their power from the consent of the governed. That's why America was different. And those people who would destroy America have to destroy the Christian foundation of this country. That's why they put their people under the Supreme Court and took God and prayer out of our schools. That's why they will not allow mention of creation or intelligence designs in our schools. That's why Hollywood and the people who put out our television programs are so intent upon destroying our belief in God. And a perfect example of that is the program on Friday evening, the Book of Daniel. It's designed to undermine belief in God and to ridicule belief in God. And the minister is a drug addict, and his father is having an illicit affair. His father is a bishop having an illicit affair with another bishop in the church who is also a dope addict. And every single person who's portrayed there has no worthwhile moral relativity. They're all depraved in one form or another. That's, of course, the message they want to give you about Christianity. And they know exactly what they're doing. They don't want the American people to understand that America is under attack today. And the battle certainly is not in Iraq. The battle is right here for the hearts and souls and minds of the American people. And with that as the background, Pastor David Whitney, thanks very much for being with us again.
On your show, it's a privilege to be able to share with your audience these truths. And as you say, it's the foundation. If we get back to the foundation, we can restore the Constitutional Republic. And most people don't understand that if we don't restore the republic, the things that you're sharing mean that we're all going to become slaves of the New World Order. That's their design. That's their plan for us. And our founders knew that they were what was taking place for them was designed, as they said in the Declaration, to tyrannize them and designed basically to make them slaves. In that case, slaves of King George III, slaves of the British Empire. And they knew that God did not make them slaves. And so when they rose up and established this great nation, they established it on a footing, like you say, unlike any other nation in the world, a footing of God's law. And what people have been lied to about our form of government is that oh yeah, maybe the Declaration, the people were religious in that era, or you know, they were rooting it in a biblical worldview, but not by the time of the Constitution. It was a secular vision they had for America.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, go ahead, David, and pick it up from there. You were mentioning that what they will try to convince you today is that by the time the Constitution was written, the people, the founders of this country, were not religious any longer. They were deists. They didn't believe in the God of the Bible. They didn't believe in the Bible at all. And any idea that we were formed by Christians as a Christian nation and that our freedom came from God, that had no relevance at all, any more than it should today. After all, everybody knows we're a democracy, and whatever the president says, why goes, and the courts simply will go along with him. And because we are supposed to have a government that looks after us. That's what President Bush said. You elected me to look after you, and that's what I'm doing, and that's why we're violating the laws and spying on people. But it's only on the terrorists, and, well, people who might be terrorists. Pick up the story from there, David.
Well, the lie can be dispelled that the Constitution is not a Christian document, right in the very preamble when it speaks about the blessings of liberty. Blessings come from God. Blessings don't come from fellow man or any other entity. They come from God. This is a Christian document. You go to the Article 7, the what's called the Subscription Clause, where they signed their names. They dated it in the year of our Lord, very clearly referring to the Lord Jesus Christ as the Lord of these United States. So from one end to the other, you have to deny the very plain words on the face of the text itself to come up with that conclusion. But the liars are very successful because they tell a big lie and they tell it often enough. What we need to get back is to the truth by looking at the details and understanding what the Constitution says and understanding that it's all based on biblical principles. That is, they were seeking to implement a structure that would follow God's law. They said if any law made by any human being is in contradiction, that is against God's law, then it's no law at all. So if human beings say, well, you know, the Ten Commandments says, thou shalt not steal, but we think stealing's a good idea, which is basically what the Supreme Court said in the Kelo case there with the New London, Connecticut, allowing them to steal people's property. Oh, we think stealing's a good idea, provided you're a government agency and you've got a good purpose for stealing. Well, every thief you know has a good purpose for stealing in their own mind. Our founder said there is an absolute standard, it's God's law, and every detail, every word of the Constitution is designed to implement a governmental structure that would fulfill a godly society, the purpose of a godly society based upon God's law. We've been speaking in previous shows about the Article 1, and we've talked about the various sections of it.
Hold that thought right there, David. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan, and go right ahead, David. David is just talking about Article 1 of the Constitution and its relevance to what goes on today, because everything is relevant. And remember, the founding fathers of America created a centralized government with limited power because they did not believe that men were angels, that you could trust them with power. And as Thomas Jefferson said, so, well, you know, if men were angels, we wouldn't need government. And, you know, if you think that government, that people cannot be trusted to take care of themselves, then how can you possibly give power to other men to control them and look after them? They recognized that man was basically evil and sinful, and that's why they wanted to tie him down for mischief with a change of the Constitution and limit what our elected officials could do. That was the secret of America's Constitution and why we were free, because the federal government could not do whatever it wanted to. It could not tax the individual. It could not regulate the individual. And that's what the Constitution was about. So you pick the story up there, David.
Well, just to remind us of the very first phrase of Article 1, immediately following the preamble, all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States. And so they said the limit of our federal government is that the people making law are only the legislative branch, which is the Congress and the Senate, the House and the Senate. In other words, the president cannot make law. The edicts he issues, which are called executive orders, they are not law. He's issuing an executive order that may give directions to those who are in cabinets and departments that he oversees, but they're instructions, they're not law. And yet, the way our country is run today, many of the presidential executive orders of past presidents are treated as if they were law. The other thing this makes clear is that the Supreme Court, nor any federal court, makes law. They don't make law at all. So when people say, the Supreme Court has determined that Roe v. Wade is the law of the land and abortion is the law of the land, no, they didn't. They decided in one judicial opinion, and that's the word at the title at the top of every judicial edict, it's an opinion of this court on this one case dealing with these people, Roe and Wade, and no one else. So it did not become the law of the land because it's not a piece of legislation that comes from the legislative branch. So people need to understand that it's only the legislative branch that makes law. And that gives it a great deal of power, which, as we'll look at the other branches, you'll see the checks that are and balances that are placed against the powers granted to Congress. But Congress actually has the greatest powers of all the three branches granted to it. And one of the most important sections of the Constitution is Article 1, Section 8, which details the powers granted to Congress. And there's actually 18 specific powers granted to Congress. And we need to understand these because this is all the federal government has the grant to do. That we, the people, have given the federal government the grant to do 18 things. No more than these 18 things. By the way, many of the things the federal government today is currently doing are not on this list of 18. Education is not on this list of 18. According to the Constitution, as originally intended and as originally designed, the federal government has no business in education whatsoever. So the fact that they've got their nose in there, spending billions of dollars with no child left behind and all this idiocy, is a direct violation of the Constitution, which means the congressmen and senators that passed that bill, they violated their oath of office. The president, when he signed it, quote, into law, he violated his oath of office. And in fact, our founder said in an early court case, Marbury versus Madison, that any law made repugnant to the Constitution is no law at all. That is, if a law is made and Congress did not have the power to make that law, then it's no law at all. And you look at this, you say, that means many things that are being treated as law, even that have been gone through the legislative process, been signed by the president, passed through judicial review by the Supreme Court, they are really not law, because only those things that are in complete accord with the original intent of the Constitution are actually the law of the land. Because the supreme law of the land, Article 4, Section 4, the supreme law of the land is the Constitution. Any law made in violation of it is null and void from the outset when it was first made. Well, looking at this list of powers, that 18 powers that Congress has, the very first one is one that ought to, you know, give us a little pause, because it's the power to tax and spend. And we know that the power of government to tax really is the power to destroy people's lives financially. And so a limit, a very clear limit, was placed upon their ability to tax and spend. Congress can tax and spend for only three reasons. These three reasons and no other reasons at all. Again, you need to remember the Constitution is a limiting document. When it says they can tax and spend for these three things, it's only for these three things. If it's not stated in the Constitution that they can spend for anything other than these three things, every spending bill passed that violates these three things is a violation of the principles of the Constitution. The first thing they may tax and spend for is the payment of debts. And again, this was a very honorable thing that they did. Most governments, when forming a new government, repudiate the past debts of the former government and say, that's none of our business, we're not going to pay that. But our founders were men of principle based on God's law, and they knew if you made a commitment, you made a promise to pay. It didn't matter if your circumstances changed. You had better pay that which you owed, because to make a promise and break that promise is to break God's law. And so they were willing to pay the debts that they had incurred, and those were pretty significant debts. Mostly related to the war for independence. We had gone deeply into debt to fund that war, and so was a sizable thing to take on. The second reason and cause for which they may tax and spend is for common defense. In other words, the military and army and navy and so on, those they could tax and spend to fund the support of what would be common defense, and we'll talk about details of that a little bit later on. The third is to tax and spend for general welfare. We need to underline that word general because it meant, as it was known right up until 1936 and stated even by the Supreme Court, that general always meant it had to benefit the entire country. In U.S. v. Butler, Supreme Court case in 1936, the Supreme Court said general welfare implies government may not tax and spend for specific welfare of individuals, regions, or socioeconomic groups, or to regulate under the guise of taxation. The power to confer or withhold unlimited benefits is the power to coerce or destroy. The Supreme Court recognized it. You don't have the right to tax and spend for the specific welfare of either an age group or a region of the country. The government, according to the Constitution, has no business taxing and spending money in the Gulf states for the Katrina disaster.
And, of course, this is the big problem today, David, is that we have this legislation that's passed. They call it pork barrel politics. And, you know, you vote for my legislation to give, you know, $100 million to build a canal in my district, and I'll vote for $150 million or $500 million to build a port in your area. And, of course, why should the people in my area where I live pay for a $500 million port someplace else, or as they were trying to do up in Alaska, to build the so-called bridge to nowhere, a quarter of $1 billion to build a bridge to an island with 50 people living on it? Of course, the reason that they really wanted to get that there was because a Senator Stevens' daughter owned a lot of property there on that island, and her property would go up in value. So he pushed for that, and he actually got it through. Eventually, they withdrew the funds for the bridge. They just gave it to Alaska to pay any way they wanted to. And, of course, this whole idea that this is the way you buy votes, this is the way that you corrupt the system, is give the congressmen and the senators the ability to appropriate money for their electoral districts so they can get reelected, and you can take from one group and give to another. And I call it legalized stealing.
It is. And what the taxpayers need to recognize is that somebody always loses in that, and it's always the taxpayer, because the federal government is not efficient. And so money is lost if you said, okay, Alaska is going to send $500 million to Washington, D.C., and Washington, D.C. is going to send that $500 million back. No, never happens. Washington, D.C. consumes a whole lot before any of that money was potentially going to return to Alaska. It would have been better for Alaskans to keep the $500 million themselves, determine as a state how they were going to spend it, and never send it to Washington in the first place. But, as we'll discuss later, the loss of the power of the state legislature over the Senate was a tremendous blow that has allowed this kind of pork barrel politics to go on now for almost a century, and we are the losers. We, the taxpayers, are the losers, because it's not being spent for general welfare. It's being spent for specific welfare. And the Supreme Court reversed themselves. Basically, they changed their mind within 1 year, from 1936 to 1937. In Stewart Machine Company v. Davis, they said in this and subsequent decisions, they held that Congress may tax some groups and subsidize other groups because, well, the subsidized groups will spend more and thus they'll stimulate the economy, which will benefit the general welfare. And so basically from that point forward, 1937, the Supreme Court has repeatedly obliterated the distinction between general and specific welfare. You could say it's as if the Supreme Court came along with a can of whiteout and they whited out the word general from the Constitution. And the result is they have vastly expanded federal power in a way that was never intended by our founders. And an easy way to illustrate this and think about this is if I were to talk to your listeners and talk to, I don't know, 100 million other listeners and urge them to call their congressmen and insist that they fund a fund, the David Whitney Welfare Fund. And it's for the specific welfare of David Whitney. But I could argue I am going to benefit the general economy with this $10 million each year because I'm going to buy houses, I'm going to buy cars, I'm going to buy planes and boats, and my purchase of all these things is going to help lift the economy, and the general welfare will be benefited if you give David Whitney $10 million every year.
And that's, of course, is ridiculous, and that's why you use the example, but that's what they're doing in Congress every day. We'll go right ahead, David.
So the first power granted to Congress is to tax and spend for only those three purposes: payment of debts, common defense, general welfare. The second power granted is to borrow money. And boy, this is a dangerous power, as we see today. We're trillions of dollars in debt because the federal government has borrowed money and borrowed money and borrowed even more money than it even is even comprehensible in the minds of people. And yet our founders recognized there might be times when borrowing money was necessary. Unfortunately, the checks and balances designed by our founders, such as the Senate being appointed by the legislatures, once that check of the states on the federal government was destroyed, then these provisions and powers granted to Congress, they just took full advantage of. Well, the third power granted to Congress is to regulate commerce. Three areas of regulation of commerce were granted to them: with foreign nations, with Indian tribes, which again were sort of like foreign nations, and then among the several states. Now, you remember that during the era of the Articles of Confederation, one of the major problems is the 13 states were often treating one another as foreign powers in terms of trade, and this, you know, created a great deal of problems for commerce and trade. And so they designed this, that the federal government would have oversight, Congress would have oversight of interstate, that is, between states, commerce. And they could regulate the production and commerce only when it was taking place of businesses that were selling to another state, never when it was just within the state itself. That is, a producer was producing something, say, in the state of California, and he was selling it in the state of California. Well, the Congress would have no regulatory power whatsoever over that sort of transaction. Where that began to change. It was recognized clearly even up to 1918 in U.S. Supreme Court decision Hammer v. Dagenhart and Carter v. Carter Cole, that it was recognized that Congress could not regulate intrastate production, that is, within the state itself, under the guise of regulating interstate commerce. And they couldn't pull a fast one, and yet that changed again in 1937. National Labor Relations Board versus Jones and Laughlin Steel. There, the Supreme Court ruled that Congress can regulate labor disputes on an intrastate level of steel production. That is, the steel is being produced in the same state that it's being sold in, and they said, well, it can be, the Congress can regulate it if it is necessary to ensure a free flow of steel in within that state, the production just within that state of any goods which ultimately are intended for interstate commerce, that is, between states. So an example would be in, say, Michigan, and a company is producing steel, and that steel is being sold to the car company, and down in Detroit they're manufacturing automobiles, but the automobiles aren't all sold in Detroit, they're sold all over the United States, and so obviously the automobile manufacturer is engaged in interstate commerce. But the steel manufacturer is selling within the state. He's only doing intrastate commerce. The original intent of the Constitution said that steel production cannot be regulated by the federal government, by Congress. Only the production and sale of the automobiles that are going to be sold out of state has any regulatory authority granted to Congress. But they destroyed that original intent in that case, NRLB, versus Jones and Laughlin Steel in 1937. And they went even further than that in a ridiculous case in 1942.
Hold that thought for just a minute, and we'll bring our stations right back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. And he's talking about all of these Supreme Court decisions that have been passed that have allowed the government to expand the so-called interstate commerce. In other words, if you make steel in one state, it's only going to be sold in that state. but it might produce a car that would travel to another state. Therefore, they could justify regulating the labor relations and whatever happened within that steel plant that created the original steel. You must understand what's really behind this. There have always been those who wanted a dictatorship in America. They've been here since the founding of our country. They have worked within covert organizations. Their goal was, of course, to establish a dictatorship here and then use America's financial and military power to bring about what they would call democracy through the rest of the world. But it would really be an authoritarian system of government where you would have the perception, oh, people would have a painted finger or ink on their finger. That meant they voted. That meant that whatever the government did was all right. You must understand it's all a matter of perception. If you vote people into office and you give them unlimited power, it'll be misused. And you can always rig the elections, like, for instance, the election in Ohio that made President Bush the president. And there was one precinct with 800 people that registered, but the voting machine, which happened to be run by a gentleman who counted the votes, he was actually the chairman of the Bush for President Committee in the state of Ohio. This voting machine gave 4,000 votes for President Bush in a precinct with only 800 registered voters. And the explanation, well, it was a hiccup. It was just a hiccup. You have to understand that democracy, because it gives power, unlimited power, always leads to corruption, and that's exactly what Plato had said. Democracy always degenerates into despotism. John Adams, the second president of the United States, said this: remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide. And later he wrote that democracy will soon degenerate into an anarchy, such an anarchy that every man will do what is right in their own eyes, and no man's life or property or reputation or liberty will be secure. And that's really what we're seeing today. And we see how the Supreme Court has intervened, and that is because people were placed in the 1930s onto the Supreme Court by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who really wanted a fascist society. But, of course, you couldn't tell the American people that. That's what the Supreme Court nomination of Judge Alito is all about. And let me just comment. I interviewed Paul Weyrich this morning. Paul Weyrich is one of the three or four people in Washington, D.C. I know who I really trust. He's been around a lot longer than I have. He thinks Judge Alito is a very good man. And so I would certainly encourage every one of you who believes in our Constitution and wants to get back to a situation where we would have limited government to call your senator at his local office and at his national office and recommend they vote for Judge Alito. The calls are coming in. 1,000 calls against Judge Alito, 30 or 40 in favor of him every day. Why? Because those who hate freedom are organized, and the Christians, the good people, whether they be Christians or simply want to maintain their freedom, the good people are not organized. Our religious leaders are not doing anything because there are some of them within the so-called conservative Christian group are really on the other side. They're planted there to prevent anything from being done. They don't want things to change. They want the Supreme Court to ratify ever-increasing power with the federal government. So with that as a background, David, I'll be quiet. You go ahead.
That's okay. You have great things to say, Dr. Stan. Well, the Supreme Court became even more outrageous on this interstate versus intrastate commerce clause. And often one of the biggest abuses today of our Constitution is exactly this commerce clause, that the government has given itself permission to basically do whatever it wants. Well, this farmer, Filburn, was raising hogs on his farm, and he was raising his own crop to feed his hogs. Well, the government was regulating him, saying how much grain he could raise and so on. So he wasn't following their dictates because he was consuming or having his hogs consume the grain he was raising, and they took him to court over this. And he said, well, you have no business regulating what I do on my own farm. I am not involved in interstate commerce. My hogs eat this grain, and that's the end of it. And they go, oh, no, we believe you are, because potentially you did not buy grain from the elevator, which may have come from another state. So you affected interstate commerce by the fact that you chose to raise the grain yourself and feed your own hogs with that grain. And as ridiculous as that is, that's the decision the Supreme Court has come up with, effectively obliterating the distinctions between interstate and intrastate commerce.
And of course, if you really understand, it's all a move towards the dictatorship here in America with all powers in Washington, D.C. At that point, it all begins to make sense. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. David, pick up the story from there.
Okay, so that's the third power granted to Congress to regulate commerce. The fourth is to make rules for naturalization and rules for bankruptcy. It's not the president that makes those rules, nor the Supreme Court. It's Congress that makes those rules. And they have, again and again, passed legislation that clearly established laws for naturalization. They make the laws. It's the executive branch's duty to enforce those laws. We have a president today, and he's not the first, certainly Clinton before him and others as well, that have chosen to not enforce the naturalization laws. They have chosen to turn a blind eye and basically open our southern border and let anybody in who chooses to cross the line. And basically, an invasion has taken place of our land across the southern border, and they have not defended us from that invasion. If you were to analyze what's taken place, they've done everything to encourage that invasion, offering amnesty, offering Social Security benefits, and basically enticing more people to come across that border than ever before. So they have violated the law of the land, and yet nobody has the guts to hold them accountable. Bush could be impeached on this point alone. He failed to uphold the laws that he swore in his oath that he would uphold the laws. And again, the laws for naturalization up until about 1965, those laws were designed to keep the balance in America ethnically what it was up to that point in time. So primarily Europeans and only small percentages of people from the Oriental world or from the South American world were permitted, not out of any racist dislike for other cultures, but rather a recognition that our entire form of system, this form of government, depends upon citizens who are committed to a Christian worldview of law and government, and that those coming from European countries have a background in a Christian worldview of law and government because of the Reformation that affected every European nation. But other nations around the world, whether they're in the Orient or in South America, do not have the same history, do not have the same heritage, do not teach their people the same principles, and therefore, if you were to allow an invasion of those people to ultimately become citizens, they would not be committed to the founding principles of what made America, America. They would not be committed to the founding principles that there is a Creator God, that our rights come only from the Creator God, and that it's the sole purpose of government to defend and protect those God-given rights.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon and this evening is Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. And before I forget, David, I want you to give out your address and your telephone number, and I want our listeners to know that the Institute of the Constitution does help Radio Liberty bring these programs to you on a regular basis, but we think this message is so very, very important. So, David, how can people get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution and perhaps set up a program in their own community where they can begin to teach others this most carefully suppressed information about the fact that we are a republic, not a democracy, and the function of our federal government was to be limited very specifically by the change of the Constitution, because only with limited government could there possibly be liberty.
And we offer people an easy way to communicate these truths. It isn't dependent on them to teach them. Actually, we've put together what we call a host kit that has DVDs of lectures by Dr. John Eidsmo, godly Christian who is leading the charge in helping people recover the truth. It's, as you say, suppressed. It's not taught in the public schools, not taught in the colleges, universities, not even taught in law school, so that most people don't know these truths. But they're right there. Our founders clearly expressed themselves They're not just in the founding documents, but the Federalist Papers and many other writings are available to discover what the worldview was of our founders. Dr. Eismo does an excellent job of explaining the Christian underlying and underpinnings and foundations that they constructed our constitutional republic on. People can get this host kit and conduct an Institute on the Constitution in their own community by giving us a call. Our toll-free number is 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or they can actually order our host kit on the web if they go to our website. Our website is iotconline.com, iotconline.com. We encourage people all over the country to take this task up because this is the most effective thing they can do at this point in time is to educate as many of their fellow citizens because we need a large grassroots body of educated citizens who can turn our nation around because we do have a founding document that we can return to. Yes, our constitutional republic has been injured seriously and is on life support or worse, but it can be revived because the founding documents have not changed. And the original intent, if the American people were to understand the original intent, they'd be outraged by what is being done to our liberties by the federal government and many by state governments and local governments as well. We can return to this godly form of Christian constitutional republic if the people will first understand the governing structure and return us to that by putting people in power who will only obey the Constitution, the terms of the Constitution we're talking about here. For example, in Article 1, Section 8, it says, you know, the Congress can only do certain things. It's not given permission to do anything else other than what's on this list of 18 things in Article 1 and Section 8.
And I think this is really so vitally important. And what's really exciting is the fact that all across the country, these study groups are being set up. People are beginning to learn about our Constitution. And more people are learning something that the establishment, those people who want a fascist society, don't want you to understand. And that is that in Washington, D.C. today, in both houses of Congress, we have people who are really, by the definition of the Patriot Act, they're terrorists. Why? Because they're trying to change our form of government. They've sworn to uphold the Constitution, and they have violated their oath of office. And I don't care if they've been there for 5 years or, as Senator Byrd, for 30 or 40 years. I mean, these men are traitors to our form of government, and they have to be exposed. And the only way that you can expose them is with the truth. And our job is to educate the American people. And, David, you're setting these institutes up all across America, aren't you?
That's right. And 47 states now have at least one class being offered. And many states, multiple classes are being conducted. And as a larger and larger body of citizens recognize these truths, it means people who espouse the founders' view of law and government have a greater and greater probability of being elected to office. I think of a very close election that took place in Montana. Rick Jor, his election basically was stolen by the Democrats who had their Democratic judges change things, and yet the people of Montana know this was a stolen election, and it was stolen because those wicked people in power recognize they're going to lose their tyrannical dictatorship if people like him get into power. And so the battle is entered, and as a larger body of citizens understand these principles, we can elect godly men to office who will take us back and who will oppose and fight these tyrants, these new world dictators is what they really are.
And we need people in government who fear God, who will obey his commandments. And we don't want a theocracy. We want a limited central government. And it was really based upon a belief in God that where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. It was these ideas that really were so foundational to the creation of this country. It was the writings of Samuel Rutherford, who was a Scots theologian, who said that all men were created equal. The king was born in sin, and men were born in sin. So why should the king have the authority over the men? All men are created equal. And it was those ideas of Rutherford then were incorporated in our Declaration of Independence. And so you need to understand the foundations of our country. and then you need to help reclaim it. And if you don't, who will?
That's
and
right.
Not now, when? Go ahead, David.
Well, we were talking about naturalization, the change that took place in 1965 is very interesting, because up to that point in time, a balance was being maintained of what the ethnic heritage of our country was up to that point. And that was changed by some evil people, LBJ being part of that. And they opened the door to change the whole complexion of our country, because they knew if they were going to impose their new world order, they were going to have people who were not committed to the worldview and the understanding of law and government that our founders held, that they needed people who would not believe that and who would not follow that. And they recognized the best way to do that would be to dilute the electorate, flood the country with people not committed to that worldview, and that's exactly what they've been doing. And even they weren't satisfied with the law change that took place, and so they stopped obeying the law altogether and are encouraging illegal immigration by the millions. And California there, the devastating consequences of that on the ground for any border state that faces that invasion from the south.
And I really think it's so important that if you look back to 1965, what was going on then? Why, we were involved in a war in Vietnam. The purpose for Vietnam was not to defeat communism, because all during the Vietnam War, the United States government was lending money to Russia, that was lending money to North Vietnam, that was, of course, killing our boys in South Vietnam. And we built the Kama River plant in Russia, and we put up the money for the Fiat Motor plant, all during the Vietnam War, and let Russia countless billions of dollars so they would have the weapons to supply to North Vietnam to kill our boys. Now, then what was Vietnam about? It was a great distraction to keep our attention off what was happening here at home. And our boys went overseas to fight for freedom as we lost our freedom at home. The same thing is happening today. As our boys are fighting over in the Middle East, and I really fear that the war will soon be expanding dramatically, and so they can justify more controls over us here, but as our boys are fighting for freedom overseas, we have a massive invasion of illegal immigrants intentionally being brought in to create a multicultural, multilingual society, so they can play one group against the other, so they can justify ever more power over the lives of our people, and out of the coming chaos will come order. But it will mean the loss of freedom as we know it. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to understand. So pick up the story there, David.
So in addition to making rules for naturalization and bankruptcy, the fifth power granted to Congress was to coin money, regulate the value, and fix weights and measures. Very important to remember that as you study the details of the Constitution, there is only two types of constitutional money, gold and silver. No other money is constitutional money, which means if you open your wallet today and you pull out one of those greenbacks, it says Federal Reserve Note. Well, everything about that thing is a lie. The Federal Reserve is not a government agency. It's a private bank. And that was given permission by Congress in 1916. There's no reserves in it whatsoever. There's no gold backing any of that currency, and that delinking from hard metal, gold and silver, behind the dollar, which was finally ended by Nixon when he closed the international gold window. That's been going on for years. I remember my grandmother. She lived through the era of the Depression, and she recognized what a wicked president FDR was. She remembered FDR stealing the gold. And everybody in America knew FDR was a wicked man who stole the gold from Americans, saying it's illegal to privately own gold at that point in time. And so the shift away from constitutional money to this fiat currency that has nothing behind it is, again, a devious and wicked plan. Basically, it's the federal government stealing from every citizen in America. Every day they steal from us when they're printing fiat currency, which is backed by nothing and has no intrinsic value, and so people see their house prices just escalating astronomically, and they feel great about that. They think, oh, this is wonderful. My house was worth $100,000 a couple years ago. Now it's worth $200,000 or $300,000. What they don't realize is they are being stolen from. That's why the price increase. In other words, the dollar is being diluted in its value. This fiat currency is being diluted in its value on purpose by overprinting much more. And the result is the price of everything rises, so it looks like your house has increased in value, when in fact what's happened is the dollar has decreased in value so much and been debased so severely that now, you know, it looks like your house is worth all this money, when it's really not. Because if you were to take the money selling your house and take that money and try to purchase something else with it, you'd discover you can't purchase that much with all that supposed money that you have gained. So it's a good trick on their part. They've deceived most Americans into thinking that their wealth is increasing, when in fact their wealth is decreasing by this fiat currency. You see, our founders understood these principles because they had experienced these themselves during the era of the Articles of Confederation.
But even before that, our founding fathers knew what had happened in ancient Greece when they suddenly devalued their currency, when they debased it. In fact, Aristotle had written, you know, there's nothing wrong with a fiat money system as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. Aristotle recognized that, you know, almost 250 years before Christ was born. And certainly, you know, they knew what had happened in ancient Rome, where they had debased their currency. And of course, they knew what had happened in France in the early 1700s under John Law, what had happened under the era of the continental currency, you know, in 1776. So they were very aware of the fact that we had to have currency that was backed by gold and silver. Else, why you'd have politicians who'd be just simply spending money so they could get reelected. They would flood the society with false money with nothing behind it. And everybody would be prosperous for a time until the whole system collapsed.
And that's exactly where we're at. And the danger in our fiat currency is something that most Americans don't recognize, but they should, and they should be speaking loudly in the ears of their senators and congressmen and saying, you have to end this because you are destroying our wealth. You are stealing from us. And people need to look at it that way. It's their aim and their actions are actually stealing from us every day by this counterfeit money, which is really what it is. It's not real money at all because it's in opposition to what is constitutionally permitted for Congress to do. They're not permitted to change the currency from gold and silver. That's not a power granted to them. So by doing so, they have violated the Constitution and violated their oath of office. Well, the sixth power granted to the federal government is to punish counterfeiting. Very interesting. We're just talking about counterfeiting. The federal government is basically counterfeiting whenever it prints the fiat currency that's in our pockets. That's a form of counterfeiting. And yet they were the guard dog supposed to watch the hen house here regarding money and punish any counterfeiting that was taking place, when instead they're the ones plundering the hen house themselves. But it's important to note at this point that from the Constitution's original intent, there are only three crimes that the federal government is granted power to prosecute. This is one of them, counterfeiting. The other is treason against the country, and the other is piracy on the high seas. Those are the only three things our founders granted the federal government power to prosecute criminally. There was a reason for that. They recognized that the police powers of any government are extremely dangerous. And if those police powers are not very strictly controlled and strictly limited, the police powers will expand until you come to a situation where you have a police state. And they knew that the guard and the protection against a police state developing was to keep the police powers under the local control as much as possible. That is, the most powerful law enforcement official in the era of our founders and their design was the county sheriff. All the way down to that level, that's the most powerful law enforcement official. And on the books in most places, it's still that way, but most sheriffs don't know that, and most American citizens don't know that. And so we have the federal government today with all kinds of enormous police powers, with the FBI and the CIA, NSA, you just go on, and the list of agencies and the Bureau of Alcohol, Fire, and Tobacco, and the list seems endless of all these police powers that the federal government has. They're all unconstitutional.
And, of course, they all carry guns. They are tried doing everything they can to bring our local police under federal control, always in the name of course, fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's hiding in a cave in Pakistan. But we've got to begin to take our local police forces to Washington, D.C. for training by the federal government and of course, to, you know, actually to militarize our police, you know, and get them armed with automatic weapons and bulletproof vests and all of the things that you'd find with any military organization, and that was never what was intended here in America. Okay, fine. Well, we've got about 30 seconds for you before I have to take. Then we'll have 3 minutes after that. Go right ahead, though. Oh, let's get your telephone number and your web page out one more time, because
sure, our telephone number is toll free 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. And our website is iotconline.com.
And let me just recommend this whole program to you. It's very important. If the people of America don't know about the foundations of our freedom, how can they hope to protect them? And if you don't understand the foundations of your freedom, how can you pass on to your children and your grandchildren this wonderful secret that made America at one time the envy of the world? Well, David, go ahead. David, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Yes, and so this power to punish counterfeiting as well as treason and piracy was very important to keep a limit on what the federal government was doing in policing America. And to recover this vision means we need to train sheriffs to hold the line. Basically, a sheriff being the highest law enforcement official and the most powerful law enforcement official in a county. He's the one that has to be approached by the FBI to come into that county and do anything, or the IRS and their police force, or the ATF, or you name any of the agencies. If the sheriff understands his power, he can prevent a great deal of the evil that is being done by those federal agencies in our day. For example, here in our own county, we just had a young man a while ago that was shot in the face by an FBI agent who approached him thinking that he and his car was a bank robber. The man did nothing wrong. He rolled his window down, and he got shot in the face for it. And, you know, he survived, which we praise God for that. And yet that FBI officer suffered no consequences, no reprimand, no loss of his job, nothing at all for shooting an innocent citizen on the streets of our county. And that's a failure on the part of the sheriff to hold that federal agency accountable for their evil and say, you do that in my county, you're not coming back to this county again. You will not be permitted to have any police action in my county. So the sheriffs of America, if they understood the powers designed for them, they could prevent much of the evil that's taking place today.
But, of course, the thing is, if a sheriff really stands up against the federal government, they'll come after him, they'll run somebody against him, they'll provide unlimited funds to get rid of a sheriff who tries to do what's right. And as long as the federal government has unlimited power, ability to tax or to print money or to simply to borrow money from other sources and to fund this authoritarian system that will target people who speak out in favor of freedom, then no man's life or property or family are really safe.
Until we raise millions of Americans who understand these principles and turn the bums out of Washington, D.C., and throw out the people who should be impeached on the Supreme Court, and on the list goes of things that need to be done to clean up our system and to restore our constitutional republic. And that's why it's so encouraging that people across America are studying these principles. Last month I was out with a group in Illinois and talking with a fellow who's running for governor there and others who are politically active who understand these principles and are willing to act upon them, saying, I understand what the constitutional limitations are, and I want to see them returned to, and I'm willing
hold
to...
Hold that all right there.
Time.
Well, I guess this evening has been certainly Pastor David Whitney at the Institute of the Constitution. Always a pleasure having you with us, David. Do you have one parting thought before I let you go?
I think Thomas Jefferson said it well when he said, anyone who desires to be ignorant and free desires what never was, and and never will be. If we want our freedom, if we love our liberty, and if we desire the liberty for our children, our grandchildren, great-grandchildren, we have got to act before it's too late. The first thing we must do is educate ourselves, then educate as many people as we can. And our host kit at Institute on the Constitution is a very simple way for anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to do exactly that, to help restore our constitutional republic.
Good night, and God bless you.
God bless you. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. And, of course, our guest has been Pastor David Whitney, and it was Thomas Jefferson who said this. Sometimes it is said that man cannot be trusted with the government of himself. Can he then be trusted with the government of others? Or have we found angels in the forms of kings to govern him? Let history answer that question. And that's what it's all about. Do you value your freedom? What sacrifice are you willing to make to preserve it? Do you believe it's all right to send our boys overseas to die in Vietnam and in Iraq to fight for your freedom, but you're not willing to defend it at home because this is where the battle really is? The battle was never in Vietnam. We never intended to win the war. We were never allowed to win the war. The battle is not in Iraq. We're not trying to win the war. We are funding the PLO that is funding the insurgents. We are supporting the Saudis who are funding the insurgents. We are funding the Pakistani who are training Al-Qaeda terrorists. What's wrong with this picture? Maybe nothing is as it appears to be. Reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. Ladies and gentlemen, we are involved in a spiritual battle, and behind everything going on today, there are powerful spiritual forces. And if you haven't read my treatise on the occult hierarchy, you need to get that. Of course, you can go up on our webpage at RadioLiberty.com and certainly go through all the list of the various things we've written on this subject about the secret societies. There really are secret societies. Either between 2 and 3 million Masons in America who've sworn a horrible blood oath looking for the light without ever understanding the source of the light. They worship a different God, the great architect of the universe. And when you become a Shriner, of course, you swear your oath to Allah. And that's why the Shriners wear the little red hats. They swear an oath to Allah. You have to understand so much of what's going on, and even most Masons and Shriners don't really understand the significance of what's taking place. So we ask you, of course, if you go to our webpage of RadioLiberty.com, that's RadioLiberty.com, and you can certainly pull down our material. You can find out about the pamphlets we've written called The Occult Hierarchy. That's the occult hierarchy, and it's really three pamphlets, which are a compilation of the letters we've written that will help you to really understand what we're up against. And then, of course, we ask you to seriously consider our book, Brotherhood of Darkness. We ask you to seriously consider helping finance Radio Liberty, joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day, trying to educate the American people. We ask you to ask your friends to listen to our programs and to challenge what we say, copy our programs, and of course, you can distribute them as long as you want to, as long as you're not making anything off of them. Copy our newsletters and get them out, and then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so, till we're together again, may the Lord be with you. Good evening. Again, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask you to hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line certainly one of my favorite guests, and that's Alan Quist. And Alan is a teacher. He teaches up in Minnesota. He's basically part of a small group over there. They used to call it Mr. Edco, or the Maple River Coalition. What do they call the group right now, Alan?
Hi, Dr. Stan. We now go by EdWatch.
EdWatch, okay.
EdWatch.
And of course, Alan and his wife and a group of people up there are really dedicated to educating the American people about the effort on the other side to take over control of our educational system and change the attitude of our children towards God and family and country. And it's amazing what a small group of dedicated people can do. And certainly one of the reasons I asked Alan to be on is because he's going to be putting on a conference in the St. Louis area here. When is that conference going to be?
Dr. Stan, that the conference is coming up here in just 2 weeks. It's January 26th, 27th, and 28th, and it is in St. Louis. It's the Education Policy Conference, and it's put on by Donna Hearn. And this is really the premier education conference in the country. And it has been for a long time, so it's very well done. And I would encourage your listeners to think about being in attendance.
All right, fine. And certainly Donna does a fine job. But, you know, Chris, you're trying to get people educated. I don't think the average parent has any idea what they're doing to the heart and mind and soul of their children.
That's very very true. And because people are so unaware of what's happening, Dr. Stan. Actually, Dr. Donna Hearn has me speaking twice at the conference, which I didn't realize until a week ago. She's going to work me pretty hard, but that's fine with me. But the first topic I'm speaking on is the new mathematics, and it's called integrated math. And the reason I'm starting there is because, and by the way, integrated math is a total failure, and if you want to make sure that your students don't succeed in college math, and you want to give them integrated math when they're in K through 12.
Now, why would anybody want to be sure that the students didn't learn mathematics? Why would anybody want to dumb down our students?
Well, it's very interesting, and it really is a dumbing down of the math, and it's called fuzzy math and a few other things. Let me just mention two things. There are a number of reasons, but one is that the modern education system does not believe that there's any such thing as truth or knowledge, that everything is what they call a construct. It's all a word game. And by the way, that's getting out a little bit. In fact, George Will wrote a column on that 3 or 4 months ago. And so if math isn't real, then why study it? And so you invent your own math and you do group projects and all of that. But I'm convinced there's another reason, too, that's even more insidious. That is, a lot of people do not like the fact that the United States is the only superpower, and so they really want to diminish the influence of the United States, and one way to do that is to damage the education of our children, including in mathematics.
In other words, what you're really suggesting is that America is under attack today in a conscious, organized, intentional effort to dumb down our students so America will cease to be the light on the hill, the hope of mankind, the leader of the free world. We'll be back in just a moment with Alan Quist. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Alan, that's really quite a thought that there might be people who are actually doing this on purpose. Alan, are you there? Well, I hope we didn't lose Alan. Maybe
hi, Dr. Stan.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm right here.
No, go right ahead. We are going to just keep right on talking through the break, so don't worry about that. So
okay.
Go ahead. Now, basically, I was just simply saying that it's quite a thought that this might be happening on purpose. We've said for years, oh, it must be these people are just totally inept, these people who are in charge of our educational system, and you're suggesting that they are intentionally dumbing down our students?
Yeah, this is big news to you, Dr. Stan. But yeah, that, you know, and of course the bottom line for most of these folks is they're global government people. They're one world government, and the United States is the only barrier to setting up a global government. So they're going to do anything they can to weaken the United States. And so it's a twofold strategy. It's indoctrinate our children with the worldview, if you will, of the radicals, and then to diminish the education capabilities. That includes the ability to think critically, but it's ultimately the ability to govern ourselves. And of course, our leadership in technology is going to be severely damaged through the math thing. So they know what they're doing, and they're very good.
And what's really so interesting that other countries in China and in the Malaysian countries in India, they are pushing for excellence in education. And here in America, we are stressing mediocrity. They'll do anything to create mediocrity, and that's why when our students graduate from high school and they are tested competitively with students throughout the rest of the world, they do so poorly. Now, how could that possibly be with all the money we spend? Oh, shucks, we need a new government program. Oh, shucks, we need to spend more money. Oh, shucks, if we just got our kids into school in the second, at 2 or 3 years of age, free school, then things would be better. How would you respond to all of those explanations?
Well, a lot of things, but the first thing I would point out is that there's no correlation between the money you spend and the results in education. And there are many, many, many studies that demonstrate that. And here in the Midwest, I say to people, if you want a good school, a good public school, go to a remote area of South Dakota or North Dakota and go to a one-room country school where you've got one teacher and you've got all 8 grades. Worth survival, and the test scores of the kids are much higher there than they are anyplace else in the Midwest. The second thing, and Dr. Karen Ephraim talks about this extensively, is that there have been numerous studies about preschool, and this is true for Head Start.
Hold that thought for just a moment here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just talking to Alan about, so many people will say, well, the problem is we just had more money. Why, it certainly would have better education. Oh, if we just simply got the children into a preschool, get them in at 2 or 3 years of age, those are the children who are really going to do well. And then, of course, they say, well, simply if we, would perhaps have more equality, or we spent more time, broadening this child's horizon, or we teach them, these new forms of fuzzy mouth. I mean, we'll try another new program. Let's experiment some more. And certainly, Alan was simply pointing out that there is no correlation between the amount of money you spend on education and the end result you get. And his suggestion was, if you want a good education, go someplace into the backwoods of Idaho or Montana and go to a one-room school where they have all 8 grades together. And those children, ordinarily, when they're tested at the end of their education, do far better than those who go to the big city schools in Washington, D.C., and or in the major cities where they spend so much on education and the kids just are not learning. And then Alan was beginning to talk about this idea of preschool. If we could just get our kids into preschool, and you were saying that Sharon Ephraim has written about that?
She has, and she's really one of the nation's top authorities on preschool. And here again, the studies show, and that there are numerous studies out on this, that preschool, and this includes Head Start, doesn't matter what the preschool is, does not have any impact, any positive impact at least, on education past the third grade. It'll have a limited impact on first grade, second grade, but by the time you get past the third grade, there is no difference in academic scores. of the kids that have been to preschool versus those that haven't.
Well, gee, and my goodness, I see advertisements on television all the time. I mean, night after night after night, telling me how wonderful preschool is. If we could just got those kids into preschool, who's putting up all the money for that? And why are they lying to us?
Well, as you know, it's the money, first of all, comes from some of the very left-wing foundations, the Carnegie Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and so on. But there's a lot of government money that's going into it, both federal and state money. And, of course, what's coming along with it now, and we have been fighting this in Minnesota, and we're trying to fight in Washington, what's coming along with this is now a required curriculum for preschool that is requirements on, well, you're going to get this money now that you're used to if you just teach this program that we want you to teach. And, of course, the program is the same program that's in K through 12. That is, it's the whole worldview of the left. So let me give an example of how this works, Dr. Stan. You've got a preschool. Now you've got 2- and 3-year-olds, and they're going to go in for their, they're going to lay down on their rugs for their nap, okay? The teacher is instructed to read to them, for instance, the story of two swans. And it's a love story. It's a love story of a male swan that's courting a female swan. And it's a very pretty story. Well, halfway through the story, the male swan ceases to be male and is now a female swan. So all of a sudden, you've got a love story of two lesbians, lesbian swans. And oh, what a beautiful thing this is. So in this story, after the children have identified with the swan, she changes sex, and they're now being indoctrinated into homosexuality as they're going to sleep when they're 2 years old. Now you tell me, how many 2-year-olds are able to critically evaluate the propaganda that they are being fed? So that's what it's all about.
And it's really about changing their worldview, their attitude towards God and family and country, and it will turn them against their parents. They know exactly what they're doing, and certainly it is all intent upon destroying their belief in God. That is the purpose of education today, is to destroy the belief in God. That's why they teach evolution, but you can't mention God. You can't mention intelligent design. You can't mention the Creator. Oh, no, that would be terrible. You can preach all sorts of other spirituality. You can teach the Earth Charter. You can preach paganism. You can teach tree-hugging. You can preach environmentalism, which is a religion. But, of course, this is part of this massive conspiracy against God. Until people understand that, they can't understand anything that's going on. And night after night after night on television in my area, and I suspect all across America, they're doing everything they can to convince parents, if you really love your children, you're going to turn them over to the state when they're 2 or 3 years old so they can begin their indoctrination process. Would that be a fair statement?
That is a fair statement. And, It's interesting, too, even at the college and university level, you had 1 year ago now, in fact, I think it was January 5th, 1 year, a couple of days ago, is when the president of Harvard, Larry Summers, said in his speech that there might be some genuine differences between men and women, which everybody knows, and which there are, again, many scientific studies that demonstrate. And I was just tonight previewing a video on these scientific studies. Well, the uproar was in the education field when he said there might be some genetic differences between men and women that are significant was so great that he was forced to apologize a day later saying, oh boy, I guess I really didn't know what I was talking about. And here's a guy who, by the way, was on the cabinet of President Bill Clinton. I mean, this guy is not a conservative, okay? And so a day later, he's forced to apologize. Then the Harvard faculty takes a vote of no confidence, and by a percentage of about 55 or 56%, votes no confidence towards their president, Larry Summers, even though what he said is verified by a wealth of very good science. That's the kind of mind control and political correctness that is being imposed on every school, except some good private ones and homeschools, in our country.
And the great tragedy is the parent has no grasp of what's going on or what the child is being taught in school. Now, you said you were going to be talking on two things. You were going to be talking on math. Is there anything else you wanted to say about the fuzzy math concepts and how it's being used to destroy our children's ability, really, to understand mathematics? Was there another subject you were going to talk on?
Well, I'm going to talk about two, but let me say a little bit more about fuzzy math first, because it's very, very clear that fuzzy math is based on the worldview of, or the writings, if you will, of the Italian Marxist Antonio Gramsci. And for you listeners, if you want to check that out, go to the website, type in, or go to Google, type in Antonio Gramsci, and then bring up his essay called On Education. Because what he says in On Education is exactly integrated math. It's everything that's being taught there. It's the group projects, it's teachers are guides on the side, they can't be instructors, about how people are trapped in the prison house of language, so they have to invent their own mathematics and all this nonsense. So it's the Marxist view that is being taught. And so you've got a double hit here in integrated math, because the Marxists, of course, say the reason that some countries are poor is because rich countries like the United States exploit them. And so Marxism, number one, wants to damage the United States, actually wants to destroy the United States, but let's just say it wants to damage the United States. And at the same time, then, it's the worldview of the Marxist, which is a godless worldview. There is no God, there is no morality, there is no truth, okay? That at the same time is being taught, instead of teaching real math, you've got this radical worldview being taught. So that's why integrated math is such a disaster. By the way, a year ago, I asked the head of our math department at Bethany College, just out of the blue, I said, Ron, have you noticed any difference in the students coming to Bethany College taking your math classes, comparing those who have taken integrated math versus those who have taken traditional math? And he looked at me like, hey, this person knows something that I'm not sure he should know. So he said, yes, I have noticed a huge difference. Well, I said, tell me what it is. He said, students that have taken integrated math cannot do college-level math. Dr. Stan, every college and university math department in the country knows that this is true. And yet the public does not have any idea what is going on. The truth is being bottled up by the left because they don't want the public to know.
And of course, do they, I know, for instance, when I went to college, why, if you couldn't pass the entrance English exam, you had to take what was known as bonehead English. Fortunately, I had a good high school English teacher, and she prepared us for those entrance exams. But I understand now that they even have something like bonehead mathematics, where when these kids get out of high school, they have to take special courses before they can even get into mathematics in college?
They have to take remedial math classes. And now here's the second thing that I need to mention, is because the math tests, and this is true with the SAT, it's true with the ACT and the like, because the math tests, due to the federal intrusion in education, the federal curriculum, because the math tests are now based on integrated math, the colleges and universities have found that they cannot trust the scores that the students are making on these math tests. And so colleges and universities are now forced to write their own math exams so that they can properly place the students. Because they now have students who have taken integrated math, and first of all, they get A's in integrated math, and they've got lots of math classes. Then they take an SAT, and they do well in the math, because the math there is integrated math, and then they get them into a college calculus class, and they are totally lost. They have no idea what's going on. So that, too, is what the colleges are forced to do. So you get the student that plans to get a degree in whatever, finds himself or herself in remedial math. Dr. Stan, I'll tell you what they do, is they leave. They say, I'm not going to do this, and it's going to take me way more than 4 years. I don't have the money. I don't have the time. I've got better things to do. I'm out of here.
And, of course, the greatest thing, worst thing you can do to a child is cheat them out of an education, to cheat them out of an opportunity to really advance themselves. And we're doing this to so many of the kids in the black ghettos across America. We're doing it to the white kids. We're doing it to the Hispanic kids. They know what they're doing. But they don't want the parents to know, and that's why what Alan and his group are doing is so vitally important. And when we get back, I'm going to have Alan tell you how to get in touch with their organization, because certainly EdWatch is, as far as I'm concerned, the best organization we have in America dealing with education and really doing something about it. There is an organized, orchestrated effort to dumb down our kids. They're doing a great job. Because, of course, in the slave state, you sure don't want smart kids. They wouldn't want to go along with their slavery. Well, Alan, you said that we're going to be talking on something else as well besides...
Right. Yeah, the second topic is going to be on the Constitution, what the federal curriculum does to the Constitution, essentially, the distortions of the Constitution.
Now, this is basically the No Child Left Behind program that Teddy Kennedy could never get through, so George Bush got it through for him.
Together with Teddy Kennedy.
Right. And so basically what it is to change the child's attitude towards our government, never to let them really understand the miracle of America and the source of our freedom. So how do they go about altering their concepts about what a great country we have?
You know, they've got a million ways to do it, but let me just take the matter of the Constitution, for instance. The way that this is taught in the official textbook, and this is the one that's subsidized by our tax money, and the one that they can sell for $10 a pop because it's subsidized by our tax money, so it competes with other textbooks that sell for $60 and $70. The way they do it in there is that the Constitution is treated in the first couple chapters pretty fairly. I mean, it's not great, but it's not bad. But then as the textbook goes on, you find that things really, really change. And right in the center of the textbook, there's a unit that is titled, What Does the Bill of Rights Mean to Us Today, for instance. And so it's a past, present, and future organization to the textbook. You've got the past, now you've got the present. Okay, what does the Bill of Rights mean to us today? And it's intriguing to see how three of the amendments in the Bill of Rights have now totally disappeared when you get to the middle of the book, which is, how does this apply to me?
I mean, so the ten amendments, the first ten amendments, the first seven right. amendments, right?
That's right. And so in a very slick way, the textbook deals with the First Amendment in great detail, talks about, the various aspects of the First Amendment. There are five different aspects to it. And then, my stars, what happened to the Second Amendment? And so the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, is totally gone. It's out of sight and out of mind. And then the whole treatment ends with the Eighth Amendment. And so the Ninth Amendment and the Tenth Amendment, which, of course, are the limited government amendments, are gone. And so limited government has been taken out of the Constitution. Well, I mean, without limited government, the Constitution is anything you want it to be. Because the purpose of the Constitution is to limit the government to those powers given it by the Constitution. And so you now have the living Constitution, which means whatever the court means it to mean.
But this is being actually subsidized by the federal government?
It started in 1994, and then the No Child Left Behind continues it. The program, We the People, including the textbook, is specifically included in the appropriations bill.
Now, why would George Bush have done something like that? After all, I mean, he professes to be such a great patriot and a conservative. Why would he have pushed through legislation that would bring in a textbook that would undermine the very foundations of our country? Is it possible he just has no idea what the program is about?
Well, you know, I don't know what the answer to that is, Dr. Stan. You know, I tend to think because I have read what the One Worlders out of the UN Publishing House say about him. I mean, they treat him as the enemy, as opposed to Bill Clinton, of course, who they treated as their blood brother. They think he's the enemy. And so I think that there, to some degree, is ignorance on the part of Bush and his people.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Alan Quist. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Alan Quist from EdWatch. And before we go on, Alan, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your organization, how they can get on your email list, how they can, of course, affiliate with you and find out what you're doing.
Okay. Well, our organization, again, is EdWatch. And let me give out our website address first. It's simply EdWatch, EdWatch.org. And so people can go to our website, edwatch.org, and all the information is there. If people want to contact us by email, we're edwatch@lakes.com. edwatch@lakes.com. Phone number is 952-361-4931. That's 952-361-4931. 4931. And we love to have people contact us. Our website, you know, gets about 10,000 hits a month now. And so a lot of people are getting our information, and we're delighted.
And certainly they do an excellent job, and I recommend Alan's material to you. And, of course, they have Michelle Bachmann. Is she still the senator in the state, state senator?
Michelle Bachmann, a state senator. We work with her extensively. She is absolutely top of the line. She's running for Congress in an open seat here, 6th District, Minnesota. So that's what she's mostly involved in right now.
All right, fine. Well, if any of you want to back a congresswoman or congressman, but a congresswoman in this instance, I've talked to Michelle many times. She knows what's going on. She's principled. She's a lawyer. They're not necessarily exclusive, but whatever you think, she's a wonderful, a warm individual, and she deserves our help. Is she running as a Republican nominee?
She is running as a Republican, and the way it all shakes out is one of our Democrat senators, Mark Gayton, is not running for re-election, I think because he feels he probably couldn't win. And so we have a Republican congressman who's running for that Senate seat. His name is Kennedy. Interestingly enough, it's not Ted Kennedy. And so that's open. That gives us an open congressional seat, and this is the congressional seat where Michelle Bachmann lives. So she's running as a Republican for this open congressional seat.
Well, if maybe we can get Michelle on here, and hope that will be, of course, for the 2006 election.
That's correct.
All right, fine. We'll have to get Michelle on. But, of course, I would recommend her candidacy to any of our listeners. She certainly is dedicated to the same principles we are. So let's get back to to what's happening in education. And certainly we find this conscious, organized effort to dumb down our students. And Alan was talking about what they're doing as far as this the program. It's a textbook that's out there. It's called We the People. It's part of the No Child Left Behind program. And they actually sell the school districts a beautiful, beautiful textbook called We the People for $10. It's subsidized by your government. But the purpose of the textbook is simply to distort the child's belief of our form of government. And what they do, of course, when they get to the Bill of Rights, with the first 10 amendments, they only discuss 7 of them. They delete the Second Amendment, they delete the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, which deal with limiting the power of government. And if you take away the Second Amendment, which gives the right to people to bear arms to protect themselves from excesses of government, because our founding fathers feared government, and then you take away the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, which limits the power of the government over our lives, then, in fact, you can have a dictatorship. Perfectly all right. Now, why would they possibly leave those out? I mean, you couldn't do that accidentally. The people who wrote this textbook had to know exactly what they were doing when they actually wrote the textbook, and they simply deleted 3 of the 10 amendments.
They knew exactly what they were doing, and it's not by accident that when this funding bill in 1994 was passed, and then No Child Left Behind, that this group, the Center for Civic Education, that writes the textbook, was specified by law, Dr. Stan, as being the organization that, number one, would get the government funding that's in the spending bill, the appropriations bill, and number two, the one and only organization that was authorized to write this kind of textbook. And so the textbook has the seal of the United States Congress right on the front, okay, to give it the aura of respectability. Nobody had a chance to bid on it, and in addition to that, they weren't told to write something and bring it back for review. They were given a blank check. You write the textbook, you do whatever you want, it's subsidized by tax money, and of course schools are going to use it because they can get it for almost nothing.
And what year was that this legislation was enacted?
First in 1994, and then it was reauthorized in the No Child Left Behind law in 2002.
Well,
same language.
I can see why Ted Kennedy would love that, because Ted Kennedy wants an all-powerful federal government. But why would President Bush back him? I wonder, of course, I wondered the same thing when I found the Bush Foundation had given their 2003 award for finest legislator to Ted Kennedy.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, what's been said, that politics makes strange bedfellows. I'll never forget watching the Super Bowl, the last Super Bowl game, when, of course, they sang the Star Spangled Banner, and people all across the stadium stood, and most of them put their hand over their chest, and they were singing away because they love our country. And then there were two presidents there, two best friends. One of them was a Republican, George Herbert Walker Bush. The other was Bill Clinton. Only neither one of them had their hand on their chest. Neither one of them was saluting, and neither one of them was singing. Everybody else was singing their dedication to our national anthem, representing that. But I guess they were just too busy with their other thoughts. Well, let's get back to what we're talking about today. And we're talking about certainly this book that's put out, We the People. It's a whole educational program aimed at teaching civics to our young people. So then, of course, you were talking about how in the middle of the book, why they discuss the Bill of Rights, and of course they take out three of the first 10 amendments, and then what happens, Alan?
Well, after that, when you get to the last part of the book, you find out what the real agenda is, because Dr. Stan, well, let me go right at the end. I mean, the end, the final part of the textbook, the last thing, is that it ends with the question, do you think that world citizenship is possible in your lifetime? And so that's where the book brings the student to the notion that we don't want to be American citizens. Why, we want to be world citizens. We want to be global citizens.
And that's really the real function, the foundation of everything that's going on today. There is a long-range plan to use the financial and military power of the United States to bring about a world government, and, of course, to force this on people throughout the world, but specifically to get the American people to want to go along with that, to be willing to renounce our national sovereignty, and simply to pledge our allegiance not to the republic for which our country is based, not to the flag of our nation, but to the United Nations, to the United Nations flag, to this idea of global citizenship. Are they effectively actually changing the attitude of these children? Is there any counter to this? Do the children ever hear the other side of what's wrong with world government?
Not in any of the textbooks. You know, I suppose here and there you have a teacher who's patriotic and who sees what's going on and is going to expose the deception and the lies, but certainly not in any of the government-funded books. They never find out what's wrong with world government. They never find out what's wrong with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. They never find out what's wrong with the International Criminal Court.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking with Alan about this textbook that is being used in our schools all across America, called We the People. It's being used to teach children about civics. And, of course, the first part, Alan says, is not too bad. By the time you get to the middle, why they begin to totally degrade our whole constitutional concept, and only mentions seven of the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. And then, of course, as they go into the last section, it all has to do with world government and how wonderful world government is and how wonderful the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is and how much better that is than our outmoded Bill of Rights, because under the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, you have all of these things that are guaranteed to you. Of course, your freedoms are there. You have all the freedoms you have here. Of course, they can be taken away at any time if the government wants to, but that's all right. Look at what a wonderful thing this is, and then it concludes with the idea of will we have, a global citizenship in your lifetime. So what they're doing is indoctrinating our children with this idea of internationalism, and that's what it's really all about. And until the American people understand what's wrong with the United Nations, what's wrong with global citizenship, what's wrong with this whole concept of giving up our national sovereignty and adopting, raising our living standards and our level of freedom to that of the Bolivian peasant, until the American children understand why we have something unique and novel in America, how can we possibly hope to save it? And, of course, they've targeted the minds of our children, haven't they, Alan?
Yeah, that's really true. And what you say about, the students need to understand what's great about the United States. They need to understand our history. They need to understand our system of government. And, of course, what the left has done is that they have already removed that. And so the students and many of our citizens don't know what's great about our country, and so they're sitting ducks for the propaganda that's out there. So one of the things that we do, and one of the chapters in my new book, America's Schools, has to do with the principles of freedom that are embodied in the Declaration of Independence. I call them the 12 Pillars of Freedom. And I'm very gratified to see here and there that this is being picked up by teachers, usually not in public schools, but occasionally, because these 12 Pillars of Freedom are the foundational principles that make our country what it is.
Why don't you tell us what those 12 Pillars of Freedom are? Is your book out yet? I haven't heard about it.
The book is out. It's called America's Schools, The Battlegrounds for Freedom. It came out last spring. It's also, like the first one, quite inexpensive. And, by the way, the second chapter is integrated math, and so I go into everything on mathematics in great detail. By the way, in Minnesota, we threw out integrated math now a year and a half ago. And so we, you know, we found we can have some success here. But anyway, the 12 Pillars of Freedom are what's in the Declaration. And the Declaration of Independence really is the foundation for the Constitution. People don't understand the Constitution until they understand the principles which are in the Declaration. So, first of all, paragraph 1 of the Declaration clarifies two of the pillars of freedom. The first is national sovereignty, okay? And what's mentioned first is the most important. And so national sovereignty is where it begins. The second principle, also in the first paragraph, is natural law. That is, recognizing that there is genuine right and wrong, that these principles of right and wrong are the same for all peoples, all cultures of all time, that there is real morality. And so that's where the Declaration starts. And then when it gets into the second paragraph, we hold these truths to be self-evident. And what I find, the few students of mine that have memorized some of the Declaration started here, and I said, why didn't you start at the first paragraph? Gee, I don't know. But anyway, the second paragraph then goes into the into the other principles. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Pillar number 3 is that there is such a thing as truth. There is truth. It can be known. And as a teacher, it not only can be known, it can be taught, it can be tested, because you can understand it. And so the new education system denies that there's such a thing as truth. It's whatever you feel or whatever they want. This is pillar 3, that there is such a thing as truth. Principle number 4, or pillar number 4, is equality. That we are all created equal before God, and therefore we are equal before the law. We are equal in the minds of the state. And so the way the Declaration says that, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. That is, our rights are God-given. They cannot be taken away. They cannot be diminished. Our rights are not given by government. Government has to recognize these rights, but they are given to us by God. Specifically then, to go on, there are 3 rights that are guaranteed us in the most basic principles in the Declaration. And these rights are then the right to life, that of course obviously implies to unborn children, as well as the elderly, as well as Down syndrome kids. The second right mentioned is liberty. We have a right to be free. This is given us by God. And the last right mentioned is really the right of private property. And so we have the right to own the property that we do, and that's what gives our economy, of course, the strength that it does. The Declaration then goes on to say the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and property, and then it goes on to clarify that the purpose of government, the single overarching purpose of government, is to guarantee these rights, that is, to protect these rights. And that's government's number one job. And if government isn't doing that, then people have the right to abolish it and set up something else. By the time we get to the end of the Declaration, towards the end, there are 2 more pillars of freedom that are clarified. And one of these is states' rights. And, of course, that's totally gone in the new education system. But state sovereignty is part of the declaration. And then last but not least is the recognition of divine providence. And the way Benjamin Franklin said that is, he said that the longer he lived, the more convinced he was that there is a God who governs in the affairs of men. And ultimately, countries succeed or fail because they have the blessing or support, if you will, of God himself. And so those are the 12 pillars of freedom. I'm just going through my memory files here to see if I have gotten all 12. And I think that I have them all. One I mentioned indirectly, not directly, and that is also that the principle of popular sovereignty, that is that the people rule. And that isn't to say that the people rule contrary to God's law, because the way our founders saw it is that God is at the top of the political hierarchy, and his law is at the top, and then God gives the right to his people to form governments. And so we don't have absolute power, but we have power under God to govern ourselves. So those are the 12 pillars of freedom. They're all clearly stated in the Declaration. And one of the things that teachers out there need to recognize is that this is what our country is founded on. They're clearly stated in the Declaration, and that this is because of these principles that we are a great country. So we need to teach them.
I agree with you totally, and I'm looking for it. I will call your wife and get a copy of the book. I think it's important that that it's getting out there, and we'll do everything we can to help you. Of course, we do carry Alan's other book, Fed Ed, which goes into the background of this No Child Left Behind program, and we think it's a very important book, too. But how can people get this latest book that you've written?
You know, the easiest way, again, is probably to just go to our website. We've got order procedures there, edwatch.org, our phone number, which is 952-361-4931, or they can email us at edwatch@lakes.com.
And again, the name of the book.
The name of the book is America's Schools, The Battleground for Freedom.
And it really is, because, of course, they understand the importance of controlling the mind and reality of children. And it was amazing how long it took me, after I got out of college, before I could begin to think independently and begin to question the things that had been programmed into my mind that were really not true. And so much of education today is not education, it's indoctrination. It's indoctrination in ideas by those people who have an agenda, who've infiltrated and taken over our educational programs, and of course they're really working at the behest of the great tax-exempt foundations established by the great fortunes of America. You would think that they would be pushing the free enterprise system, but they're really not. They're pushing this whole idea of doing away with individual freedom and centralizing all power in Washington, D.C., and eclipsing the freedoms that we were guaranteed, which we inherited from our founding fathers. So I think it's so vitally important people understand why America is different than other countries and why we're losing the freedom that so many men have fought and died for down through the decades, through the centuries. So, Alan, what's the response you're getting to your new book?
I don't have the numbers yet, but I know the response is very good. And the earlier book now has gone through three printings, and we're going to have to print a fourth time because we're just about sold out again. And the second book, America's Schools, is selling at least as well. So what we find, too, is that the best way these books sell is by word of mouth. And people read them, and then often they'll come back and they'll buy a quantity. They'll buy a case from us or whatever, and they give them away. And then their friends read them, and they buy them and give them to their friends. So the response has been very, very good. And interestingly enough, Dr. Stan, the reviews on both books have been totally positive. And that's interesting because the reviewers typically check my sources and they say, my stars, everything Professor Quist is saying is accurate. So it's really, it has gone well. Also, I think of significance. I mentioned columnist George Will here, an article he wrote about 3 months ago. Just this last week, he wrote another column on the teacher colleges and how the teacher colleges now are requiring, essentially, a radical left worldview for its students. And the National Accrediting Agency for Teachers Colleges is now saying that in order to be a teacher, public school teacher, certified teacher, in our country, you have to have a political worldview that includes social justice, which is a Marxist concept. Everybody has to have the same outcome, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so if you have a Christian worldview or even a conservative worldview, you are not going to graduate from a teacher's college. And I'm, you know, and of course I'm aware of that and have been for some time. I'm gratified by the fact that somehow George Will has found out some of these things that are going on in education, and he's willing to write about them. And what the public needs is information. It's, if they have the information, then they're going to do the right things. And that's what we found out here in Minnesota. We've made some real progress, and it's because we've been able to get the information out. Truth is powerful. And that's why what you do, Dr. Stan, is so important, because people have to know the truth, and then they're in a position to, and they will, do the right thing.
And, of course, well, it's a wonderful opportunity to be able to talk to people across America. We never know how many are listening, but we do know there's a growing audience, and now we're on Telstar 5, and people can pull our programs down, including this one on MP3. This will be posted up on our side at Soundwave 2000. So, you know, we're all working together for the same goal, Alan, and that is to try to get people to understand what's happening. You know, it was very interesting. Back in 1954, a congressional committee was asked to investigate the great tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Ford, Carnegie, and that was known as the Reese Committee, and they came out with a report in 1954 or 55, you know, basically saying that the great tax-exempt foundations were pushing socialism, taking over control of our educational system, and doing a lot of the things that you've been talking about. And this should have been known in 1955, but all reference to that committee report were simply suppressed. Everything was done to prevent the book called Foundations of Power and Influence, which we've kept in print for many years, for at least a decade, from getting that distributed. I talked to the original publisher. He told me that at every turn he was suppressed, he was opposed. He even give the books to the libraries and they'd disappear off the shelves. So the book Foundations of Power and Influence was telling this story, you know, almost 50 years ago. But I think it's so important that you're retelling this story and getting it out today, because, of course, it's even far worse. Now they've succeeded in changing the worldview of literally two generations of children. They know exactly what they're doing. And the average individual has no idea what's wrong with this idea of world government. And what we've done, I think, is really so criminal. We've taken away the belief in all that's good and noble and worthwhile for my children. We've taken away from them the idea that there are absolutes or that there is truth. And really, that is one of the basic things that they're doing, isn't it? To undermine their belief that there is something that's really true and worthwhile and noble in the world?
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. By the way, you know, I'm an adjunct professor, a part-time professor now at Bethany College, and I was started as a full-time prof there 40 years ago, last fall, and so I've seen, you know, many of these changes. But in order to open, hopefully, my students' eyes to some of these things, I'll ask them, you know, what textbooks do you have with me? You know, and one's got a book in sociology, and one's got a book in history, and one's got a book in whatever. I say, go to the index. I want to see how many times certain words are mentioned in the text. And so one of the words I'll have them look at is the word truth. They'll say, you're a history student. Okay, you've got a history book. How many times is the word truth mentioned in that history book? According to the index. And of course, the index usually doesn't cover the appendix. And I said, before you answer, and I haven't seen your book, let me take a guess. And I say, I'm going to guess that the word appears one time. And the student will look up at me every time and say, that's right. And I'm going to say, and I'm going to guess, that the one time that it's used is it's used because it's the name of a person called Sojourner Truth. And the student will look up, and the student's eyes are as big as saucers. How did you know? And I say the reason is because today's textbooks will not use the word truth unless it's part of somebody's name or part of somebody else's name. Then I'll ask them to look up other words like information or fact, and see, those words aren't used either. So the postmodernist view that there is no truth reigns supreme in education.
And the old idea that there are no absolutes, the only thing that's absolutely absolute is that there are no absolutes. So we're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program with Professor Alan Quist here at Radio Liberty. And ladies and gentlemen, the minds of your children and your grandchildren are under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Alan Quist. Alan, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
You know, let me just quickly close with this, Dr. Stan. We have to have some idea of what has happened to the Marxist worldview, which was put into effect in the Soviet Union, as well as China, as well as North Korea, Cuba, and so on. And that is that the movers and shakers, the thinkers of the Marxist worldview, came to the conclusion that the way it was done in the Soviet system, China system of revolution, socialism, and so on, didn't appeal to the West, isn't working in the West, and so they made a conscious strategy shift to pick up the approach of the Italian Marxist, Antonio Gramsci, who said, you have to do this incrementally, and you have to do it through the education system. That's what he says in his essay on education. And so it's a shift in strategy that is being played out in the United States, and they are convinced that the way they will win is by controlling our education system.
But, of course, how can they get away with this? Why aren't they being exposed?
Yeah, because the media is part of it, of course. The big foundations are part of it, and they're very good at disguising what they do. But, you know, with regards to religious truth, the Master said, if you continue in my word, then you will be my disciples indeed, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. The same thing is true, although in a lesser way, in government. And that is that people have to know the truth. That's the truth as stated in the Constitution, the Declaration, other founding documents, as you and I and others get out. People have to know the truth. Getting the truth out is the key. And the only thing that is going to keep our America free is the power of God, which will take place through people proclaiming what is true. And we commit ourselves to that end. That's what we're here for, and that's how we will prevail.
And, of course, you recognize, as we do, that we're really involved in a spiritual battle being played out on an educational battlefield.
That's exactly what it is.
On a political and an ideological and a cultural battlefield. And until people understand that there really is a war going on, it's a war for the hearts and minds and souls of our people, of our children, we're not going to be able to be effective. And I think Alan Quist is on the front lines of that. God bless you for everything you do there. And please keep me advised as to what's going on.
Well, very good. God bless you, Stan. And it's a pleasure to be on your show, as always.
It's always is. God bless. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And our guest this evening has been Professor Alan Quist from EdWatch. And you want to get their material. You know, we put people on. Sometimes we don't know too much about him, but I know a lot about Alan. He loves God. He loves America. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're dependent on those of you who listen to our program, who believe, as I do and as Alan does, we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. And the people on the other side, many times, whether they know it or not, are energized by organized evil. There really are secret societies out there, not one but a multitude of them. And you're not going to, of course, read this through your regular sources. One of the best explanations of it, telling what happened in the 18th and 19th centuries, a book written by the Librarian of Congress called Fire in the Minds of Men. Fire in the Minds of Men by James H. Billington. You may certainly go to your library and try to get a copy, or you can call on 800 number 1-800-544-8927. And James H. Billington points out that contrary to everything people have been taught in school, the great revolutionary movement that began with the American Revolution and then the French Revolution and continued through the 18th and 19th and into the 20th century and now into the of course, he doesn't mention the 21st century because the book was written some years ago, but through the 20th century and ended with the Cuban Revolution in 1959 was based not on the Enlightenment and the works of Voltaire and Rousseau, but on upon secret occult societies. Now, this is the Librarian of Congress mentioning that this whole movement began when the aristocrats began moving their lighted candles from the Christian altars onto the altars of the secret societies they belong to. And he goes into all of these secret societies and the fact that you're not going to be told this by the regular media or by most even conservative or Christian commentators simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. The book, Fire in the Minds of Men, if you heard the president's inaugural speech, February or January, I guess, when he was inaugurated, he talked about fire in the minds of men. He understands what this is about. It's just that most people don't. So you need to get the information, and of course you'll find that in our pamphlet on there are three of them on the occult hierarchy. You'll find it described in my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and so much of the information that's available at Radio Liberty. We do hope that you go to our website at radioliberty.com and that you'll call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a catalog, if you'd like to get a free copy of a newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one. Certainly, if you want to understand why your energy bills are going up, why the price of gasoline and heating oil and electricity and natural gas are going up, call and ask for a copy of our talk on peak oil, too. Or, certainly, if you'd like to understand what's going on in Iraq, you'll want to get our latest newsletter, and that's called The Wrong War. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And, of course, please tell others about our program. Encourage them to listen. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because if America doesn't turn back to God, why, we are going to lose this country. And if there's not a great revival, I see no hope, because we're moving into war with Iran, we're moving into war with Syria. It's only a matter of time. And lastly, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.